Welcome into the Shoot Around, episode 6, WGN Radio, WGNRadio.com, your place for Chicago hoops, past, present, future, pro, college, high school. Plenty to get to on the show. The Bulls continue to battle inconsistency. New coach, same problems. The race to 82, one team gunning for it, another is trying to stay far away. We'll get you caught up on the college basketball scene. Might be a little bit of a surprise on which team is the best in the state. And a huge matchup at the high school level Thursday. Number one at number two. And one of the players on one of those two teams put on for his squad. 55 points and 13 assists in his season opener. Plus, in the second half, we'll visit with Chicago hoops legend Deion Thomas. He played at Simeon, won Mr. Basketball, went down to U of I, the all-time leading scorer there. Played overseas, and now he's an assistant coach at UIC. We start with the Bulls, and why not? They're the most frustrating thing on the docket. 11-7 now, still good for third place somehow in the East, and they've dropped two games in a row against lowly opponents. 102-96 to the Charlotte Hornets, now 0-2 against Charlotte this year, and an unfathomable loss. 103-101 to the Phoenix Suns on Monday night. Blew a 16-point lead and allowed Phoenix to score 42 points in the fourth quarter. That's only been done twice since the Jordan era, just to give you some perspective on how bad that is. And these players don't even know what to say anymore. They're all saying different things. Let's just jump into it. Here's what Pau Gasol had to say about the loss to Phoenix.
Last play, Teletovic wasn't boxed out. Nobody put a body on him, from what I could tell. Those are called winning plays. It's not a basket. It's not a flashy thing. It's the dirty work that we need to start and do more of, the loose balls, the contact, the physicality of the game. Little things that make a difference between winning and losing, and that we're not doing enough of.
Yikes. Not making enough winning plays. A multiple champion saying that about his team. They don't box out. They don't dive on the floor. They're still disjointed on offense. The ball stops moving. And they don't protect the rim at all. Jimmy Butler, what do you think?
It happens entirely too often. We keep talking about it, yada, yada, yada. But eventually we're going to have to fix it. Or we're going to keep finding ourselves on the losing end of the ball game.
I agree. Killer instinct is lacking, and that's something Fred Hoiberg alluded to. And Hoiberg looks like he's having no fun. This was a guy who smiled from ear to ear at Iowa State. The mayor, he loved it. They were blowing teams out every other game. Now he's got to put up with this? My favorite quote, though, is Derrick Rose, because of course it is. Powell gave you a very descript answer. Jimmy Butler admitting what the team needs to do better. D. Rose, your turn.
I mean, we're trying to figure everything out right now. It's not going to be easy. We've got a lot of young guys. We got guys that's trying to do all the right things, but we got to figure out something.
I love this guy. Got to figure something out. I got an idea. Stop shooting. 22% from three, 38% from two, 35% from the floor. On pace for career lows in all three. I bring up that player efficiency rating all the time. I love that stat. It generates everything that a player does and puts it into a formula. Of the guys that play 10 minutes a game on the Bulls, Rose is ninth out of 11. He doesn't even get easy baskets anymore. That shot, that's the shot you got at the end of the game against Phoenix? Twisting, contorting, running, ugly floater? We got to figure it out. Got to do something. Swing the ball. You're the point guard. You're starting to look at these issues with the Bulls and look toward the roof. Look at the ceiling. What's above the team? It goes above the coach. This roster was put together by John Paxson and Gar Forman. And despite Derrick Rose's claim that there are a lot of young guys on the team, Aaron Brooks is 30. Jimmy Butler's 26. Mike Dunleavy, who hasn't played, is 35. Pau Gasol, 35. Taj Gibson, 30. Kirk Heinrich, 34. Joakim Noah, 30. Derrick Rose, 27. Etuan Moore, 26. the young guys, Doug McDermott, 23, Nico Mirotic, 24, Tony Snell, 24, and Bobby Portis is 20. This is not a young team. It's predominantly made up of veterans. And it's a bad mix of players. Hoiberg tells you before games and after games he's trying to work on his rotations and it's a game-to-game process. That's because he doesn't know what to do. It's hard to find a combination of five players that play offense, defense, and do the dirty work. Good luck. That's what happened against Phoenix. The Bulls missed a jump shot, didn't get a timeout called. Phoenix ran right up the floor, and Nico Mirotic, who usually isn't out there for a late-game stop, doesn't box anybody out. Neither does Derrick Rose. It's tough when you don't have any two-way players. Okay, there's one, Jimmy Butler. Gar Forman loved this roster coming into the season. He loved it last year. The team is thrown around the C-word. Championship. Championship teams aren't consistently inconsistent like this Bulls team. And this isn't the weak Eastern Conference anymore. The Cavs are in first at 14-7. Magic in eighth at 12-9. That's two games between 1-8. 10 teams over 500. There aren't going to be any more cakewalks. And the biggest part about it going forward is attrition. This Bulls team is mostly healthy. What happens when somebody tweaks an ankle or hurts a knee? They can't afford these injuries. But hey, they'll figure something out. I've been pondering this question for about a week now, and I think it's a really good one. The race to 82. At the end of the season, when the regular season is final, which team is closer to 82? Is it the Warriors closer to 82 wins or the 76ers closer to 82 losses? Think about that. It's a good question because Golden State is just fake. They're not even real right now. 23-0 without Harrison Barnes, playing their fifth out of seven games on the road, shorthanded, without their head coach, and it doesn't matter. Klay Thompson, 39 points. He made 10 three-pointers, and he didn't even play down the stretch. Pacers tried to close the gap late, but the deficit was insurmountable. Steph Curry had a bad game. 29 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds. It's just crazy what Curry's doing right now. He's made 119 threes through 23 games. He's the best shooter I've ever seen. And he's the most elusive ball handler. That combination we haven't seen. The only guy you could even think of going back into the Wayback Machine is Pistol Pete. Maravich was so silky with that jump shot. And he had some pretty yo-yo-esque handles. But he wasn't pulling up from 30 feet. Curry takes three steps across half court. And he shoots it right down the net. And then if you come out on him, he dribbles through you. Or he takes a screen and he throws a no-look lob to Draymond Green who stuffs it home. Or he finds Klay Thompson. This is just poetry. It's wizardry. It's unprecedented in this game. They might win 72-73 games. They might break that 95-96 Bulls record. Still think Philadelphia is closer, though, at the end of the year to 82 because that is a hot pile of garbage. Ugh! That roster is pathetic. They're trotting out a starting lineup of Jahlil Okafor, Jeremy Grant, Nerlens Noel, Nick Stauskas, and TJ McConnell. Ugh. The problem with Philly, though, is all those young guys have to be leaders at the same time. There's no mentorship on this roster. There's nobody to pull the young players aside and teach them the ropes and show them what to do and what not to do. That's why Jahlil Okafor needs a bodyguard. That's how bad it is. And I'm sure the hecklers are saying things that are just belligerent. But to push somebody down and take a swing at them, you have to be really upset. And why are you that upset? Because your team is a joke. This is the first time in Okafor's life that he's ever been on a loser. These guys can't handle it. My favorite quote in basketball is Greg Popovich. Some are short, some are long. Here's what Pop had to say about Brett Brown, the head coach of Philly.
When we played Philly the other day, I was talking about Brett Brown, who I think's an amazing coach and a ridiculously amazing human being to put up with what he puts up with. And he comes out every night fired up, positive, teaching, coaching, competing. And I told that group from Philly, I said, I'd have lasted about a month and I'd be gone already. I'd have been in a fight, I'd have killed somebody. The owners would have got rid of me. I'm not man enough to do what he's doing.
That is an awful, awful basketball team. But guess what? Jerry Colangelo's there to maybe save the day. And you know who they've got their sights set on? They're tanking for Ben Simmons, the undoubted number one pick in the NBA draft. If the ping pong ball falls their way, they'll take Simmons, who, by the way, in his last college game against North Florida, and even though it's North Florida, the 6'10", 225-pound freshman, who they call a forward, he's really a point guard, 43 points, 14 rebounds, 7 assists, 5 steals, 3 blocks, 15 of 20 from the floor, 13 of 15 at the line. Maybe when they draft Ben Simmons, then they'll start bringing in veterans. That has to be the plan here. But I'm going to go with Philadelphia being closer to 82. They'll be lucky to win 7 games this year. On a college basketball we go. The biggest surprise to me, and maybe this is because I'm an Illini fan, Northwestern is 7-1 right now. And they hung with North Carolina for most of that game. They lost 80-69. Carolina, of course, the top 10 team pretty much every single year. They won at Virginia Tech. They could go into Big Ten play with a 12-1 record. And if you win 8, you're probably in the tournament. Northwestern's never been. And Chris Collins is turning this thing around. And it helps when you have a really good point guard in Bryant McIntosh. 17 points a game, 6 helpers a game. Rarely turns it over. Finds the open teammate. You've got some leadership with Trey Demps and Alex Ola. Guys that can flat out fling it from downtown. McIntosh, 50% from 3. Ola, 43. Falzon, 40. Lindsay, 43. Taphorn, 49. Lumpkin, 37. The general, the point guard, is getting them set. They play defense. And Chris Collins is showing you that he certainly paid attention under Mike Krzyzewski at Duke. Loyola's 5-3, DePaul's 4-3, Chicago State 3-6, and they'll embark on that ridiculous WAC schedule where they go to the West Coast every other game. Big one at the United Center. Big is maybe a relative term. UIC and Illinois. UIC is the host school. That's a nice doubleheader, though, Saturday. You can go there and watch some college ball with some local flavor. And then at night, it's the Bulls and the Pelicans as Anthony Davis comes home. Wrapping things up, at the high school level, Charlie Moore. Do you know that name? You should. He's the best player in Illinois right now at the high school level. Point guard from Morgan Park. He had 55 points and 13 assists in the Mustangs opener. Of course, he's leaving the state. He signed a letter of intent to play at Memphis. And his Mustangs will travel to Simeon. Number 1, Morgan Park at number 2, Simeon. This Thursday night on the south side, lots of talent on that floor. And I love the way that Nick Irvin, the head coach of Morgan Park, and Robert Smith, the head coach of Simeon, are challenging their respective squads early in the season. Because those two teams are on a beeline to state championship weekend. Coming up on the shoot-around, we'll sit down with Deion Thomas, one of the best players ever to put on a uniform in the state of Illinois. Simeon great, Illinois great, won 2 EuroLeague titles overseas, and now he's cutting his teeth as a coach. This is the shoot-around. Welcome back to the shoot-around, WGN Radio. We're sitting courtside UIC Pavilion after their shoot-around. UIC Flames take on the DePaul Blue Demons tonight. Assistant coach Deion Thomas with me right now. A lot different than when you played as opposed to coaching for these shoot-arounds.
Definitely a lot different. I won't say it's a lot more standing around, but it's definitely a lot more teaching and touching on the fine points of what guys need to do in order to get ready, whereas when I was playing, I was just ready to kick somebody's butt.
It's funny you say that because you and I talk all the time about the lack of toughness in the college game, and that goes all the way into the pros where guys just don't commit hard fouls anymore, probably because there's two or four free throws after, but it's just there's a lack of toughness now in this game, I feel like.
Well, I mean, I believe toughness comes from not just when you're on the court, but it really comes from your environment. I mean, because you can look at I talk to my daughter about being tough all the time. My daughter's not as tough as I am. Why? Because my daughter didn't have to go through the same struggles that I did having to grow up. So with the improvement of life, has you know, kids' lives have improved. I mean, so it, now they don't have to be as tough as they had to be or really get out there and grind. You know, a lot of kids today have been given a lot, you know, early and not really forced to go out there and earn it. I mean, like when I went to Simeon as an eighth grader, you know, Nick Anderson and Urban Small, I mean, those guys just kick our butts every day. And then it started from even from home with my older brother, you know, really beating up on you and roughing you up on the court and all of these other things. And I think this is where you develop toughness. And I don't think a lot of the kids really have that today. So, you know, yeah, it's a little bit of a downfall. And then, like you said, with the new rules and all of the fouls, I mean, no impeding people's progress and these different things that, you know, they've kind of changed thinking it would make the game more exciting. I think that's kind of taken a little bit out of it as well.
You're coaching in a city where you grew up, when you played high school ball. You mentioned Simeon, Mr. Basketball. You played the McDonald's game. Then you played at Illinois, one of the best players ever put on the orange and blue. I'm thinking about you going up against Shaq, though. You guys played against each other in the All-American game?
No, actually, we were on the same team. We were on the same team during the McDonald's. But remember, we played them in Champaign when they came up as well and sent them away with an L. So I'm actually 1-0 against Shaq.
What was young Shaq like?
You know, I'll tell you this. Coming from Chicago, playing in the CPS, when I got down there, we did an interview. And one of the journalists asked me, well, what do you think about the talent here? And my response to him probably was a little arrogant, you know, a little bit of Chicago love. I'm like, I play in the CPS. I go up against guys like this every day. Now, our first day of practice, and I'm going to tell you a story because I called my older brother immediately after this. I'm in practice. You know, Shaq is on my team, as I said, big guy laughing and joking all the time, same way he is on television. And he walks over and he says, big bro. I'm like, what's going on, big fella? He says, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. There was a guy named Matt Winstrom on the team. Matt was from Texas. And at that time, Shaq was number two. Matt Winstrom was number one, even though Shaq was number one in the nation. So that'll tell you a little bit of, you know, history there. But he says, big bro, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm like, what you going to do? He's like, I'm going to get this ball, throw it off the rim. We're going to go run down. I'm going to dunk it. I'm going to come back down the court. I'm going to get it in the post. I'm going to elbow Matt, and then I'm going to dunk the ball and make it hit him in the face. I say, yeah, right. Typical Shaq. He ran down the floor, came back, elbowed Matt, knocked him to the floor, dunked it, the ball hit him in the face. That night after practice, I went home. I called my older brother. I said, you remember the name Shaquille O'Neal? I was like, because he just did some of the most incredible stuff I've ever seen in my life.
And he told you he was going to do it.
He told me verbatim what he was going to do, and he did it.
And he dominated LSU. You dominated Illinois. What was it like playing for Coach Henson, one of the greatest guys that not only recruited guys, used to recruit Chicago so well, but then also got the most out of his players?
Well, you know, I think people, and I'm really happy for him, and I'm glad you brought him up. You know, today they're dedicating the court. You know, it'd be Lou Henson Court down in, well, I can't say Assembly Hall anymore.
State Farm Center.
State Farm Center. And no one deserves it more than Coach. When you played for Coach, you never really knew where you stood because he kept everybody on the same level. I mean, you know, I'm the all-time leading scorer. You wouldn't have known I was the star of that team by the treatment that Coach Henson gave me. He kept everybody grounded, kept you on the same level. And I thank him for that because it taught me – well, I was already a humble person, but it really kept me – in an area, you know, being a young, impressionable kid, like, hey, I'm no better than, you know, Brooks Taylor, Tommy Michael, you know, or any of these guys that were my teammates. So that's one of the best things that I think that Lou really did. I don't think he got the credit for being such a good bench coach, as good a bench coach as he was. But I can definitely tell you probably, I don't know if there's any coaches in America that would prepare you more than Coach Henson did. I mean, we knew everything. Now, we may not have been as talented as, you know, the Fab Five teams or those Indiana teams with Calvert Chaney back then, but we were in the fight with them every time because we were always prepared and always ready to go.
You surprised with the way they're struggling recruiting in your home city?
You know, as an alum, it's sad. And it's not just with this group. I mean, it's been for a little while now. And to be what I feel is one of the top programs in the country, what I feel is definitely the top program here in the state, we're not doing as well as I would hope getting the top guys. And it's struggling here in the city as well. So, I don't know. You know, you hope that it'll turn around. You kind of keep your fingers crossed, you know, and we'll see what happens.
You're one of those rare athletes where you had a chance to play in the NBA. You were drafted by the Mavericks in 94, but good-looking black man goes overseas to play in Europe, and you're an Israeli citizen now, long, long, long way from home, crossing an ocean to play basketball for a living.
It was really an easy decision for me. When I was a senior in high school with John McClendon, and of course everyone would know who John McClendon was, he took our high school team along with the Marshall Girls High School team to Amsterdam. So here I am, a 17-year-old kid, and we're traveling all the way to Amsterdam, which was amazing to me. So when the offer came up from Spain, you know, which was a very good offer, by the way, you know, I wanted to see it again. I wanted to experience that again because in my mind I always felt, well, you know, you can always come back to the NBA. It's not going anywhere. So why not go and experience these things and then come back? But, you know, I ended up meeting my wife, and we were – staying there would be closer to her family, and then we'd come home in the summer. So I felt that was kind of the best of both worlds and fell in love with the place and ended up staying.
They love you too, though. They love people from America.
Depends on which country you're in. No, but I mean, they do. They really enjoy when the Americans come over. They love the style of play that we brought. I mean, especially at that time. I mean, we were the best athletes in the country. I mean, I remember playing against Pau Gasol when he was 17 years old. You know, now, did we know he would be what he is today? No, of course. I don't think anyone knew that. We knew he'd be really good when he came here. And I remember the day he told me, well, Deion, I'm going to enter the draft. And I told him, I'm happy for you. That was after they just knocked us out of the playoffs, by the way, Barcelona, that is.
And you won two EuroLeague titles as a champion. You know where those rings are? Did you get rings or did you get trophies?
You know, unfortunately, they did not give rings at that time. They gave trophies. So those trophies are actually still in the box, seeing when we moved up from Edwardsville. We never really unpacked everything. So they're still boxed up and they're in good shape. But, yeah, we got a couple of trophies.
Deion Thomas with us, WGN Radio. The shoot-around, played at Simeon, Illinois, played overseas. He's now coaching at the University of Illinois Chicago. When we look back at your cupboard full of coaches, Bob Hambrick, you've got Lou Henson, David Blatt over in Europe. How much have they helped in your progression as a coach?
Oh, very much. I mean, I've taken something, and not just for them. I mean, we have guys that I played for in Spain, you know, Salva Maldonado. Nobody will know that name, but Salva was one of the absolute best coaches that I've ever played for. So I've been fortunate to learn what I learned here from coaches like Bob Hambrick, who I believe is one of the best coaches, hands down, period. Lou Henson, of course, who's in the Hall of Fame, you know, it speaks for itself. And then to go there and learn from some of the best coaches in Europe has really helped me to mold my thinking. Of course, I came up when, you know, you were a position. You were a point guard, you were a two guard, you were a three guard, I mean a three, four, or five. But when I went there and I realized that they create basketball players in Europe. They don't create positions. You know, you're a basketball player. I mean, I remember I was telling the kids on the team one day, my first game, I'm defending, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was 7 feet tall, guy from Serbia. And we're playing, and of course we're running a fast break, and I'm waiting on him to come down to the paint, and he stops as a trail four or five and shoots a three, knocks the three down. You know, so I'm like, whoa. I'm like, what is that? So then we're going on, and we're playing again, and he comes back down, and he stops again, and he shoots another three. And I'm like, okay, what is going on here? You know, this isn't how we play basketball in the United States. A four is a four, you're in the post. A five is a five, you're in the post. I mean, you're not a seven-footer standing out here shooting three-point shots and different things like that. So that really helped open my eyes to what I thought a basketball player should look like. And, you know, now he's in Cleveland. He looks like LeBron James, you know.
You spent several years at Lewis and Clark Community College down in good old Godfrey, Illinois, which is, I don't even know what you do for fun in Godfrey. How many people are we talking about at these games?
Well, you know, we actually had a pretty good following. Now, our gym wasn't very big, so we had about 200-300 people. And you know, counting the student body, we built that up over the 5 years that I was there. But, you know, I lived in Edwardsville, so that's the city.
Uh-huh.
As I put up my quotations, that was the city down there. I mean, when you were at Godfrey, in the Godfrey-Alton area, people went to Edwardsville to go to the movies, to go out and to do different things. And, I mean, and Edwardsville is smaller than Naperville. I mean, so not a whole lot to do down there. But the reason I took that job is I knew I wanted to get into coaching. And there were avenues that were offered to me to come in as a GA, to come in as a DOBO, and things like that. And I felt that would be the place where I would learn the most. And it was, because at the junior college level, you don't have video guys. You don't have guys to do your scouts. You don't have even full-time assistant coaches, at least not at Lewis and Clark. So I had to do all of the scouting. I had to do all of the video breakdown. I had to do all of the practice preps. I had to do all of those things that I do now, here, there. And at the same time, I was the athletic director, so that'll tell you how much time I had on my hands.
I can't even imagine how many times your wife looked at you at breakfast and said, I don't know about this.
Hey, you talking about at breakfast. I remember when we were driving up, because we lived in Florida. So we came up from Florida. We decided to drive because we stopped in the middle and visited some friends and things like that. So once we pulled into Edwardsville, you know, cornfields here, cornfields there. You know, there was a cemetery here, a cemetery over there. My wife was looking, and she, you know, she was looked over at me and was like, where did you bring me to? You know, she was like, well, she was like, I tell you this. She was like, it looks like, you know, all these cemeteries are filled with people that die from boredom. You know, coming from Miami to Edwardsville was a big move for her. But, you know, I got to take my hat off to her. She told me, she was like, don't you ever question my love. And I don't.
A couple more minutes with Chicago basketball legend Deion Thomas on WGN Radio. Best three players to ever come out of Simeon.
Best three players to ever come out of Simeon. And most people would probably think, well, you're going to throw yourself up there. I think Jabari Parker is absolutely amazing. And not just, you know, for what he does on the court, just for the young man that he is. And, you know, Sonny was always one of the guys that we looked up to as younger kids, and he's really done some great things with Jabari. And I think Jabari is by far probably the best. On the other side of Ben Wilson, of course, you know, the legend is, because he was what Jabari is now. I mean, he was that, not as big, of course, but he was that 6'8". Guard forward that pretty much did everything on the court. So if I had to go one, it would be Benji. Two would be Jabari. You know, I'd probably have to put myself third. I mean, Derek was a great player, not to take anything away from him. I mean, they won the state championship and did some other things. Bobby Simmons. I mean, there's so many guys that came out. But I think I also did some things there that, you know, helped boost who I am, not just in this city, but in this state. So I probably had to put myself third.
You enrolled at Simeon the year after Ben Wilson was killed, tragically. Did you ever have any reservations about going there after that happened? Because that could skew a lot of people away.
No, none at all, really. I mean, and the whole thing was my older brother is the one that got me into playing basketball. We were sitting watching Ben Wilson and Simeon play against Carver when they had Tim Hardaway at the time. And my mother was in her bedroom watching TV. So my brother and I are watching this. And at this time, he had decided I was going to play basketball. So he was like, you know what? This is where you're going to school. And he immediately kind of grabbed me up and took me into my mom and said, Mom, we're sending him to Simeon. And my mother was like, why? She was like, and his response to my mother was, because if Bob Hambrick can create Ben Wilson, he can create Deion Thomas. And I have to say that's what he did. Because when I went in, I was blessed with a lot of natural ability, but I had no clue how to play basketball. And what he did for me and what he instructed Irvin Small to do for me, because that's the way Coach Hamburg did it. The older guys took the younger guys, and you learned everything that he taught them is what you learned. And what they did for me, I mean, there's not enough thanks that I could ever hand out for that.
Last thing before we let you go, can we do something about this pregame music they're playing now at all these arenas? What is this?
You know, I'm trying to get into the new thing, but I'm still a 80s, 90s, early 2000s rap, hip-hop, R&B guy. But my favorite is jazz, and I don't think you can play jazz and, you know, for pregame. Guys won't be too up for that. But, you know, we got to take what we can get. This is the younger generation. This is what they love.
You're being nice.
No, I'm being honest. We got to get them. This is what they get up to now. So not that I like it. It doesn't play in my car. But when we're in the arena, we got to get the guys going. So that's what they listen to.
And when you went out there before a game, what were you playing?
Oh, one of my favorite songs was Bring the Pain by Method Man. I was a big Wu-Tang fan, you know, along with some J. Rue, the Damager. I had a whole bunch of guys that I had playing with my Walkman at that time. But Bring the Pain and Method Man was my guy.
It's fun working with you. Good luck tonight against DePaul. I'm sure we'll talk to you again down the road.
Appreciate it, Sam. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Shoot Around. We'll be back next week. For all things Chicago basketball, it's very simple. WGNRadio.com. Search for The Shoot Around.